Today is March 19th, 2014, and this is episode number 247 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a tinker, a maker of inventive gadgets and extraordinary goo-gads of all sorts. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Okay, Mr. Tinker, make me an automaton.
I am working on one even as we speak.
Excellent. Excellent. I will expect to take delivery during Macworld Expo next week.
Of course, sir. Of course. If you will kindly just prepay, you can put the money here and expect delivery forthwith.
No problem. I've got my credit card right here. The name on it says Brian.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chaffin. Sir. Cash only, please.
Oh, foiled again.
And while you're here, can I offer you a bottle of snake oil?
Oh, yes, please. I am fresh out.
Let's see. How's it going?
Pretty good. It's amazing what we can do off script. Wait, I say that as if we have a script.
That's right. We haven't done a script in a couple of years.
They just get in the way.
Well, and to be fair, we've recorded 3 or 4 shows in the last couple of years.
We have, so we're on a roll.
Yeah, a roll. A roll. Speaking of being on a roll, Apple introduced a couple of new, and reintroduced in one case. But Apple made a couple of changes to its iOS device lineup.
Oh, I get it. You did a segue. Okay, I'm with you now.
Yeah,
they did make a couple of changes to the lineup. Do we want to go big or small first?
Let's go small first.
Okay, sounds good. That would be the iPhone 5C, which, wait a second, is already out. But it gets small, 8 gigs.
But wait, there's less.
Yeah, they released an 8-gigabyte model. Previously, they had a 16 and 32-gigabyte version. And they released this 8-gig version. It's the only difference, just lower capacity. It's available in China, Australia, France, Germany.
England, right?
Throughout the UK. And I think a couple other places. So basically it's China and Australia and parts of Europe.
Not India? And not Brazil?
Maybe it is India.
I
can't remember off the top of my head.
I'm very confused by this move. It made a lot more sense to me in the day before it was done, when it seemed like Apple might be replacing the iPhone 4S as the entry level device with this 8 gig 5C. In other words, effectively, $100, £100, €100 less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, what is it, 40? 40 pounds less in England?
Or yes. 60? Yes.
Is it 40 or 60?
40.
Yeah, why bother?
40. Well,
I mean, it doesn't seem to me to adequately, lower the price enough to be able to penetrate more the entry level market. I'm just confused. And who the heck is going to buy that one for 40 pounds more? You could get double the memory.
People that are looking at the dollar figure, people that want into an iPhone and they want more than the 4S, they need LTE, and they. So they'll go 40 pounds less because it's 40 pounds less. It's clearly an entry-level product. That's what they're pushing it as. But don't want it to be a free product.
Entry-level at the mid-range of the market.
Yes.
Apple doesn't participate, nor should Apple participate in the true
for Apple,
entry-level.
Yes. For Apple, this is an entry-level product, which is not the same as entry-level in the rest of the market. You're totally right. Yeah, so they've got this 8-gig iPhone, and I just had a thought. The areas that this iPhone is available in, are there carrier subsidies?
Well, in England, yes.
Then that might shoot down my idea.
In Germany, yes. Most of Europe does carrier subsidies. It's China hasn't been big on carrier subsidies. India doesn't do carrier subsidies. You know, a lot of the emerging market does pay as you go, in part because, you know, the credit infrastructure isn't there. And the credit culture is to their credit isn't there either. In England, it's definitely a subsidy market, and so is Germany.
Okay, well then my idea only partially works, which is if you are in an area where phones are not subsidized, the cost of phones are not subsidized, then this becomes more affordable for the consumer that is being very price conscious but really wants an iPhone, and doesn't eat in that much into the subsidy thing.
No, it doesn't. I'm baffled by this, and I'm baffled by the company not releasing it in the States. Of course, it could be introduced to the States later. You know, maybe this was just the rollout for the 8 gig model, but I just can't believe the demand would be high enough for them to not be able to roll it out everywhere at one time. I'm very confused by the move. I am also fully cognizant of the fact that Apple knows a little bit more about what it's doing than I do.
There's a distinct possibility that you're correct on that.
Apple did this for a reason. There is a mathematical and economic reason that Apple decided to make this move. We're not privy to that decision-making process or the data behind it. I'm sure they have a reason. I just can't see it, and so I'm baffled.
I'm speculating that the markets that it was released in are areas where Apple has figured out that the 16-gig iPhone is at a price point that is about £40 too high for part of the market they want to capture.
That's about $66 currently.
Yes.
And it would be about, 50 euros thereabouts.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So there's this market that Apple wants to grab, and there's that, we'll call it a $50 price point that's stopping these people. Instead of lowering the price of the 16-gig model in those markets, they introduced an 8-gig iPhone 5C that just so happens to be exactly that much less.
Yeah, that's an extremely reasonable assumption. It's an extremely reasonable assumption. I find it difficult to understand how that difference is truly going to help. But turns out Apple didn't ask me. I'm sure it was an oversight.
No, I'm sure it was. Check your spam filters. Yet now in the United States, that phone would be like a $50 phone.
Yeah, with the subsidies.
Yes.
So for free, you could get a 4S. For $50, you could get the 8-gig 5C.
For $100, you get the 16-gig model.
Yeah. I guess, but doesn't it also seem like there would be economies of scale issues? There would be plenty of manufacturing reasons to eliminate the 4S. So what I'm envisioning there is, here in the subsidized world, $0 for the 8 gig 5C, $99 for the 16 gig 5C, $199 still for the 32 gig, so if that's what you want, or $199 for the 16 gig 5S. And they're no longer having to make 4S's. Seems like there would be benefits there.
Everything would be on the same screen.
Everything would be on the same screen. Everything would be lightning.
Everything would be a lightning connector.
To me, Apple selling devices with both a 30-pin legacy dock and the lightning dock for this long, it's contrary to the company's focus on simplicity. I mean, you know, when it came to USB, Apple just, or ADC, I guess, Apple just cut the cord and went to USB, just pretty much lickety-split. It was very quickly. It was within a year where the entire product line was USB only, USB and FireWire.
Yeah, they did have a transition, like the Pismo. That had USB and ADB.
ADB, thank you. I said ADC. I meant ADB.
I gently corrected you. I don't think anyone noticed this.
You were so kind about that. When you should have said, aha, you said ADC.
That's what the trolls are for. Oh, but we don't have any for our show. Right. So, yeah, right. We're all nice people.
Yeah, more or less.
But yes, you're right. It was a very fast transition from ADB to USB. And we're seeing a long process of getting rid of the 30-pin dock connector. And I was really surprised when that stuck around, because we have an odd connector and we have an odd screen size compared to everything else that Apple's selling.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, coupled with this, Apple removed the last iPad with the 30-pin dock connector from its lineup. And that would be the iPad 2.
Yes. Killed the iPad 2, which I was surprised stuck around.
Yep.
I was really surprised at that. And they replaced it with the discontinued, but no longer discontinued, the resurrected, the zombie iPad.
The formerly discontinued iPad 4.
Yes, or fourth gen iPad, whatever. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Tomato pizza.
So what they did was they did what I thought they would do when the iPad Air and the Retina iPad Mini were introduced, which is have the fourth gen iPad as their base model. And they're doing it now, but why didn't they do it when they introduced the iPad Air?
Yeah, that would have made a lot of sense. So what has happened? So we've gone from having two 30-pin devices for sale, which would be the 4S and the iPad 2.
iPod Classic.
iPod Classic. Well, that's a good point, too.
But your statement holds true if you change that to, say, iOS.
Yeah, but I think it's actually fair to include the iPad Classic. I mean, it's surprising to me that Apple is selling anything with a 30-pin dock, period.
I agree.
It would be better for the ecosystem, and it would be better for customers if everything being sold now was Lightning, especially when Apple doesn't include a 30-pin to Lightning adapter with Lightning devices, let alone vice versa.
Yes. Yeah. It's puzzling. It doesn't feel like the Apple way. They're usually a company that makes clean cuts.
This is proof that Tim Cook is destroying the company, and this would never happen when Steve Jobs was alive.
Clearly.
Yeah. Just kidding, folks. But it does seem like a careless oversight. It seems there's a lack of attention to detail in this particular move. And, I think it should be fixed. And at least now in the iPad line, it's been fixed. And, you know, the 4S will at least go away this fall at the latest.
Well, we assumed that. We assumed the iPad 2 would go away. And it took longer than we expected for that to happen.
That's true. So back over to the iPad 2, you know, Apple was selling it for $399. It was a device. So, like, if you wanted the full-sized iPad, but you didn't want to spring for the $500 iPad Air, you could get this $399 iPad 2, which is fine. I think that it especially was aimed at the education market, where, you know, schools needing to save $100 per unit on, you know, 10 scores, maybe hundreds, maybe even thousands of units, where that actually matters because it adds up. I'm not sure how much of a great choice it was for other folks, but now for $399, you get the Retina display and you get Lightning and you get a much faster processor and much better graphics. That $399 mm-hmm. price tag now gets you so much more device.
Yes. Oh, and don't forget the high-resolution FaceTime camera.
And the high-resolution FaceTime camera. That's right. It's actually now a choice that people can legitimately make. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say there. It becomes a real choice. To me, the $100 difference between the iPad 2 and the iPad Air makes the iPad Air the no-brainer.
Yes. Now people can actually look at products and have to think about what it is that they want.
Yeah, if you're budget conscious, if $400 is the most that you want to or can spend on a full-size iPad, you now have a very legitimate choice. You have a product that is going to last you for a very long time that's going to offer you a fantastic experience. You know, the Retina display iPad is just so much better than the non-Retina display iPad. It's just such a better viewing experience.
It is, and I didn't expect that it would be when it came out, but oh wow, is it? Yeah,
it really is, especially when you're reading any kind of text.
Yeah, yeah, that jump from my iPad 2 to my iPad 3 was worth it for the display alone.
Yeah, and looking at the education market, if you're an educator and you want to get folks an iPad, but you need to get them on the you need to get them as inexpensively as possible, you don't want to get the iPad Mini for whatever reason. The iPad 4 for that entry level price for buying these units in bulk also became a much better business decision. It became a better decision for your students. It became something that, you know, this is a product that's going to last all that much longer and is going to be a better education experience for the students. So I just, all in all, that was a great move. Surprised it didn't happen earlier, but I'm glad it happened now. Got to happen finally.
You know, there's a little bit of information that I hadn't realized until I think it was this morning. And it's that Samsung is getting ready to release the Galaxy Tab Pro. So an Android tablet that has specs that are very close to what the iPad 4 has. Mm. $400 more.
Mm.
So Apple can undercut Samsung's brand new product with their year-old, at this point, what, year-and-a-half-old iPad?
Yeah, close to a year-and-a-half, yeah.
Yeah. So I find that to be kind of interesting.
It is, in fact, interesting, and it does. Of course, you know, this will mean lower margins for Apple on this device. It is no doubt that it costs less to make an iPad 2 than it costs to make an iPad 4. Clearly, Apple made the decision that a slight decrease in margins coupled with a tremendous upside potential for sales was worth it. And I just, again, it's just, so, it just makes that $400 purchase. It makes that $400 iPad purchase, which compared to the Android world and to a lesser extent compared with the Tiny Surface world, Tiny Surface world is kind of funny, isn't it?
It really is.
But compared to the non-iPad tablet market, $400 is still towards the high end of the price range. It is such a much more compelling choice now.
Oh yeah, I can see people that want an iPad going into an Apple store and really having a hard time choosing between a 16 gig iPad Air and a 16 gig fourth gen iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. And that, I'm okay with that, because if Apple has products that are that compelling, well, that's pretty good. They're going to make the sale. It's just a matter of which device people go for.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, the iPad 4 move, obviously we're both in agreement that it's a win-win for everyone. It's a win for everyone. And I think we're also both a little more on the jury is outside of the 8 gig iPhone 5C.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. I am kind of stymied, but I just have to trust that Apple knows what they're doing.
I assume they know what they're doing, but it is opaque to me in this particular case. And that's
why I'm having to just trust, because I don't get it, but I don't have access to all the information that would help me get it.
Right. Yeah, apparently, again, they left us out of the email loop.
Check your spam filter.
Yeah, I have to, I guess.
Yeah. Really.
Going to have to. We have a sponsor this week, Squarespace.
Awesome, because they're nice people, and they do cool stuff.
They are, yeah. It's a cool company doing cool stuff.
What do they say? They're democratizing web design?
Democratizing good design.
Good design.
Good design, yeah. And that's precisely what they're doing. And they've been adding more features in the last several months, too. They've been doing some really good TV campaigns. Have you seen any of those? I know you don't watch a lot of TV.
I haven't seen any, which is not a reflection on them. It's a fact that I cut the cord to cable, and so I just don't see commercials anymore.
Fair enough. They have good TV commercials right now. And
that's cool.
Yeah, I always enjoy seeing that. And their current webpage, if you go to squarespace.com/ACM, that's ACM for Apple Context Machine, you'll get a discount for signing up. But they've got a really cool interactive little thing that they're doing. And the background is a little bit parallaxy.
Fun.
When you move your mouse around, the background photograph, it's this giant photograph that is moving around with something in the forefront that doesn't move around. It adds a nice...
That's pretty cool.
It's cool. And why it's cool is because this is the sort of thing that they can do.
You know, for you. It just occurred to me, there might be a couple people out there that are going, what am I signing up for? Because it sounds really cool. They are a web hosting and web design company. But instead of you having to tell them, this is what I want you, what I want my website to look like, here's buckets of money. They have really good looking templates that they've designed for you, like really good looking stuff. So you can pick something, customize it if you want, or just take it as it is right out of the package. And in minutes, you can have a professional looking website.
Yeah. And they really focus on minimal design, minimal modern contemporary design websites that look and feel like a modern website should. And they're very focused on having a lot of images, having everything look good. And they've got a whole bunch of templates. All you have to do is you pick the one that you want, you add the information that you need, you customize anything that you want. If you happen to be a CSS person, a design guru, some kind of coding expert, you can get in and hand tweak all the code if you want to, but you don't have to.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's an option if you want it, but it's nothing that you have to do. And I think that's tremendous. I really, really like this company. I like what they're doing. You know, there's a lot of really bad web design out there. And most of the here's a template hosting services, most of those are just not that good.
But this stuff looks really good.
Yeah.
And for me to say that, well, that's saying a lot.
Exactly. You are absolutely and positively a design snob. It's one of
totally.
One of the things I love about you. And so if you you can get a discount to get you going, where you're getting a percentage off on either, like paying by the month or paying by the year. I would suggest you pay by the year because it's not that much. It's $99, I think, for the first year. Isn't that right?
Yep. So you save a few dollars.
Right. Yeah. So you save quite a few dollars, and you get that discount effectively for the full year. If you're paying by the month, you only get the discount for the first month. But anyway, that's beside the point. This is a little tip from me to you. You can use ACM as your code, as your discount code when you sign up, or you can go to squarespace.com/ACM and get credit that way. Check them out. If you need a website, they're such a good choice.
Yes. Yes. They can even do e-commerce for you. No kidding.
Yeah, you're right. They have a full e-commerce engine. You can, as long as you sign up for a credit card account through Stripe, it's all embedded there. So, you can sell virtual and digital goods right right through their engine. Good stuff. Check them out.
Yes. Hop to it.
Hop to it. Yes, please. So, speaking of hopping to it, Office for yes. iPad. Microsoft is hopping to it. Right?
Yeah, boy, they hopped right on that bandwagon, huh?
LOL, Microsoft.
Okay, so here's the deal for me. Everyone has been making, it seems everyone has been making Office-compatible apps for the iPad and iPhone for quite a while.
From the get-go, actually. So those were some of the first companies that jumped on iPad productivity apps were the companies that had been competing in the Office compatibility market.
Yeah, and so here it is years later, literally years later, and Microsoft is fixing to announce that they're going to release it.
they're fixing to announce that they will release it at some point.
Yes. Now, the word on the street is that it will be coming out ahead of their conference that they're having in early April. So we're presumably within a couple weeks of seeing this launch.
Yeah. Presumably.
Presumably.
All right, here's the deal. Now, our own dear John Martellaro, whom we love and respect like the elder statesman that he is.
That was really well put.
Thank you. Because he's awesome. I love John Martellaro. He is a brilliant man and a fantastic analyst, and his insight and perspective is always interesting, even when he's wrong.
I had a feeling that was coming.
Really, he has no bigger fan than me. But in this case, he put out a piece on the Mac Observer saying that it was too late. The ship has sailed and no one needs Office anymore.
Well, people do need Office. And having the Microsoft brand of Office on the iPad lends credibility to the business market. For the iPad as a business tool, regardless of whether or not you're using Office, it definitely adds that psychological boost that a lot of people need. The problem I see is that Microsoft is really late to the game because there's all these other products out there that are very capable at handling Word, PowerPoint, and Excel on the iPad.
Are you just setting up a softball for me, a soft lob for me to smash on, or do you mean that?
I like setting you up.
Okay, all right, that's what I thought, because there are a lot of Office compatibility apps out there, and Apple's own iWork suite is fantastic. But
yes,
but, and this is a huge but, the compatible.
We like to think of it as a big boned butt.
Healthy.
It's a healthy butt.
It's a healthy butt. The large butt on this is.
I totally ruined it for you, didn't
you?
I
just had to go there, didn't you? Is that none of the Office compatibility apps that I've seen support all the functions that come with a Word document, and in particular. Comments and tracking changes. I haven't seen that supported anywhere. And if anyone knows of an app that does, that can open a Word document, save a Word document, and track history, show history, track changes, and show those changes, and supports multiple people doing comments, and multiple people making revisions. If there's anything like that out there, please absolutely let me know. But those are all very important features for several industries.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Okay, here's my concern. Instead of giving us a native iPad app that's just like buying Office for the Mac, but you're buying Office for the iPad, that they're going to give us a watered down web shell thing around Office 365, and it will be a hobbled tool that will make it little more than a reading tool and a minor edit tool and a simple document creation tool.
Right.
If that's all it is, then Microsoft shouldn't bother.
All of which Apple's iWork suite does is infinitely better at.
Right. And for that, there are any number of third-party applications that already do that very well, yeah, and do more.
Do that better than the Office for iPhone, quote-unquote, version.
Which requires an Office 365 subscription.
Right. As you put it, it's just a wrapper for Office 365.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
no good. My contention for a long time has been that if Microsoft wants to make money in tablets, they need to release Office for the iPad.
And it needs to be real Office and not a
that's the caveat.
Simple reader tool.
That's the caveat, is that they can mess it up. Releasing just any old Office, doing what they did on the iPhone, the iPad, isn't going to make them money. It's not going to be helpful for users. No one's going to care. No one's going to want it. And as a matter of fact, all it's going to do is besmirch the Office name. If it's a native app and they have developed a touch interface that works for that can do probably 90 to 95% of what you can do on a Mac or PC, it will be big. Microsoft will make a lot of money, and it will turn the iPad into an even more productive device for even more people.
Yes. The fact that Microsoft did not release the name is just hideous. Office 365 Mobile User iPhone Edition or something stupid like that.
Something really bad.
Yeah. They didn't release an iPad version of that. So we haven't had a Microsoft Office type app on the iPad ever.
No, and I think they somehow prevent you from even running it on an iPhone, on an iPad.
That would be brilliant.
I don't think, if I remember correctly, I tried to install it on my iPad because I was very excited about being able to do some editing on my iPad, and they were preventing me from even downloading it to my iPad.
Huh.
That's how I remember. That was a while back, so I could be mistaken.
If so, that would really suck. But, the fact that Apple didn't release anything. No, Microsoft. They're the people in Redmond. Microsoft. They didn't release anything. Has me thinking that maybe, just maybe, they've spent all that time between when the iPhone app came out and now working on a native app that gives us true Word, Excel, and PowerPoint cross-platform compatibility.
Right. And let me back up my contention here that this is needed with a specific case scenario, and that's the publishing world. The publishing world, I'm talking about the print publishing world in particular, very much operates around Microsoft Word, for good or for ill. And part of the reason that this is so is because you can do revisions with multiple users. And each of those revisions, Word is very, very good at that. You can also do comments from multiple people where you can just, insert a comment and notate that comment, anywhere that you want. And again, it supports multiple users very well. And then you can see all the changes. You can not see all the changes, but the changes and the history is still there. All these things are very important when you have multiple people who are working on a document, which is the case in the publishing world, where you've got an author, you've got an editor, you've got a copy editor, you've got a line editor, you've got who knows how many, you've got your agent, you've got all these people who may be editing away at a piece. And the same thing is true in the PR world, public relations world, and in the marketing world, where you have multiple people working on a document. Word is very important to those industries.
Yeah, it's a foundation of their workflows. And there are all kinds of tools that have been developed over the years so that once that group of people finishes with the copy creation, that all that content creation, then that can be flowed into the next stage in the workflow, which could be putting that into a book or building long documents, or, you know, whatever it is. And there's a lot of tools out there that are designed to take all this content that you create in Word and put it into FrameMaker or send it directly to InDesign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm not pretending for a second that I want to write a novel on an iPad, because I don't. But I do actually want to edit the novel on an iPad. I've done a lot of editing on an iPad in the last couple of years. And the way that currently works for me is I make an iBooks file. I then deliver that to my iPad. I open it in iBooks. I read it in iBooks. I make notes in iBooks. And then I turn around and I have to take those notes and I have to put them in a Word document. And I would love to cut out that middleman. I'd love to be able to just take a Word document and open it on my iPad, make my comments, make my edits, save it, send it back. You know, editing on an iPad is awesome. And I'm not a big user of spreadsheets, but I believe that when it comes to viewing and editing spreadsheets, you're going to find just as much usefulness there. When it comes to PowerPoint, I think it's an abomination that should go away, and that Keynote is infinitely better, period.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still plenty of people that use PowerPoint. And again, there's probably be less creation from scratch on an iPad, but lots of editing.
Oh, yes. And really, if you're doing serious editing on an iPad, you need to have the same tools that you would have for the initial content creation, because they are the same tools.
Yeah, you need the same tools. You just don't use them in the same way or even as much.
Right. But you definitely need them.
So Microsoft has the opportunity of making some money. There's the Surface, and the funny thing is that we don't have Office for iPad today because Steve Ballmer or his underlings convinced Steve Ballmer. Someone at Microsoft was convinced that if they keep Office for iPad limited to the Surface tablet, that people will buy the Surface tablet. And they were wrong.
Clearly
they were wrong. So not only did they manage to devalue their own Office product by including it with some Surfi, at the same time, they didn't sell any more Surfi.
Surfi. I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head now. Thanks.
Good. Excellent. And so, you know, this has been a failed strategy. It was once again showing how little vision Steve Ballmer had. But he did say at one point, I think maybe 6 months ago, maybe 9 months ago, somewhere in that time frame, he said something about Microsoft that they would release a quote unquote tablet version of Office when they had fully developed the interface for it. And I'm hoping that whatever Microsoft is about to announce represents that and not the 365 wrapper that you fear.
Oh, man. Yes, that would be great. But if we get the 365 wrapper, I'm not going to be surprised at all.
Fair enough. I respect your pessimism in this case. I hope from a personal and everything is about me standpoint that you're wrong, because I would really like to have the ability to edit manuscripts on my iPad directly.
I hope you're wrong, or that I'm wrong too, because yes, it would be great to have a fully functional version of Microsoft Office on the iPad.
Yeah, and it's not too late. They can sell a lot of copies. It will perpetuate the power of Microsoft Office legacy. And this is one of those very rare occasions where I very strongly disagree with Mr. Marshallara.
We'll have to give him hugs anyhow. But yeah, I think...
If he'll let us, because he is that awesome.
I think we have to take numbers and stand in line for that. which is okay because he's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I am disagreeing with John on this one too. I think Microsoft Office on the iPad is an important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Hey, let's, next week is Macworld iWorld.
So it is.
We're both doing sessions there, and we should tell people about it.
All right. I'm really curious. What are you doing?
I am doing a how to mine and manage Bitcoins on your Mac session. So for about 45 minutes, I'll explain a little bit about what Bitcoins are, how to manage them on your Mac, and how to mine them from your Mac, which really means more like how to manage mining equipment from your Mac. But I'll get into that in the session. And then I'm also doing a Bitcoin meetup. If you're interested in Bitcoins and you're going to be at Macworld iWorld, show up for the meetup and, you know, hang out with a bunch of...
That got you all choked up, didn't it? I can understand why, because, I mean, the idea of getting to hang out with you and talk Bitcoins, that's going to be really exciting for a lot of people. And while you might think that I'm being kind of a jerk by saying that, I'm not, really.
Yes, and what you didn't hear there was the coughing attack I just had. Thanks for covering for me, Jeff. But anyway, if you're going to be there and you're into Bitcoins, come to the meetup. And we'll have the links to those in the show notes so that you can see the time and the place. And that's what I'm doing. What are you doing?
I'm really busy. I have two sessions. One of my sessions is on wearable technology, on what's hot and what's not in that market. Mm. And I have found some really interesting things to talk about. And I have also found some things that totally qualifies wearable technology, and I bet a lot of people don't even realize it. So I have some fun stuff to look at there. Then I'm also doing another session where I will show you how I used wearable and fitness technology with my iPhone and my Mac to lose weight. And I am going to put pictures of me before I lost my weight up on the screen so that people can see a comparison and know that that I'm serious when I say, people, I lost 60 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You look amazing, man.
Why, thank you. I feel so much better, too. So, yeah, those are my two sessions. And then I am going to be on two live podcast recordings. The Mac Roundtable is doing one, and then the British Tech Network is doing another one. So I'll be on both of those.
That is very cool. I'm also going to be, I'm sorry, I was stumbling over my words because I was looking up the Macworld All-Star Band is going to be on the main stage on the show floor with the Macworld Magazine's editorial team. They're going to talk to us about being in the band. So Chris Breen, Dave Hamilton, Chuck Laternis, me, Paul Kent, Bob Vitus, and Dwayne Straub will be there talking about being in the band. And we, you know, we've been doing this band for a long time now, so that should be fun.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Oh, and we'll both have some tickets to a few tickets to give away during our sessions for Cirque du Mac.
Yes, we will. And if you can find me on the expo floor, I may have a few spares.
Yes.
So find me.
Yes. Do that. So anyway, that's Macworld. If you're going to come, we'd like you to come, by the way. We'd love Macworld, our world. It's a great venue, and it's getting Paul. He's just done such a good job of remaking the show in the wake of Apple pulling out of it. And there are so many good sessions. Chuck Joyner has done this incredible series, talking with as many people giving sessions as possible. And I was not aware of the breadth of topics that will be covered in this year's sessions.
Oh, it's amazing.
He did. Yeah. Why don't we put up our two interviews in the show notes too?
Oh, we absolutely will include that.
Excellent. Excellent. Now we have one more topic for today.
And what's that?
That would be, it'd be a rumor.
Okay, let me in on this rumor.
And the rumored product had been canceled.
Ah, yes. fascinating how that works. How okay, so I'll fill people in a little bit. And so there's been a rumor that Apple's working on like a 12 or 13-inch iPad. And now there's a rumor that Apple has stopped developing the 12 or 13-inch iPad. So we have a rumor about a rumored product that it is no longer going to be made.
Yeah, yeah. And it was presented by some outlets as the Apple canceled it, or that, you know, in some way, basically, the Apple was retreating from it. And that is... That's kind of a sideshow, because I think that the important thing here is keeping DigiTimes in particular, keeping their stories that are based on leaks from Apple supply chain, keeping those in a proper perspective. That to me is the more interesting thing.
Yeah, and see, DigiTimes is an interesting publication because they have such a long track record of rumors that don't pan out or are completely misinterpreted. And yet they also have been spot on sometimes.
Well, okay. The reality is that DigiTimes has in the last, I'd say 2 years now, DigiTimes has gone from being wrong almost all the time to being right almost all the time. And people don't give them credit for that, especially folks who don't like seeing rumors at all. And, of course, you know, some people eat the stuff up. Some people hate it and think that Apple's secrets seem to be protected. And, frankly, to each your own, you know, mm-hmm. It's a very subjective thing. But the key to understanding the relevance of DigiTimes rumors is this. Every story that they run has some kernel of... some kind of truth.
The trick is ferreting that out.
And understanding what it means in the big picture. And which is something that DigiTimes is not good at. So DigiTimes is very plugged into Apple supply chain within Taiwan in particular. They have developed sources at a ton of suppliers who make Apple components or supply parts to Apple. And their stories are coming from those sources. Now, the problem with identifying unannounced Apple products from those leaks is that those sources, those people that are working in Apple's supply chain, they don't know. They might know what they were working on. They might know something that was ordered by Apple, but they don't know what it was for.
That's true. It's kind of like the old thing about the two blind men trying to describe an elephant to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they can accurately describe the one thing that they have access to, but they don't know how it fits into the bigger picture.
Right. Right. And the other part of that is that Apple is testing out new components, new ways of making components, new approaches to something. You know, Apple maintains a micromanages its vast supply chain. And they're not just ordering off the shelf parts and slapping them together, despite what a lot of Apple haters want to pretend. A lot of things are made very specific to Apple's design specs, and in some cases are using manufacturing techniques designed by Apple and with equipment owned by Apple. And a company like Apple that is always looking for the best way to do stuff, they're testing out new stuff all the time. And when they're testing out something new, those parts have to come from somewhere, and they tend to come from the supply chain. And right. And those stories, leaks from that stuff, end up getting turned into Apple's making this or that. And the reality should actually be that Apple is testing a part that could be used in this or that.
Yeah, that's it. And so we have this misinterpretation in many cases of just what it is that Apple is up to at any given time.
At any given time. Now, let's take that even further. Apple is also ordering prototype devices all the time. They're always testing prototypes. You know, the form factor that we had for the iPad didn't come by accident. It wasn't just, you know, decided from on high and lo, you know, there it was. It was a product of testing out lots of different ways to have a tablet and interface with a tablet. Same thing with the iPhone. The same thing with Apple's Mac computers. Same thing with their accessories. You know, these products are the result of testing a lot of different ways to do these things. So sometimes Apple may order stuff that they just want to try out. Sometimes they're ordering stuff that ends up, maybe that they're intending to make, that ends up getting rejected for whatever reason. You know, like they just decided that, no, turns out this doesn't work after all.
True. And yeah, there's all kinds of products that they make that never make it to the store shelves. And yeah, and then there's all kinds of products where they'll try several different versions before they nail it down.
Right. This is part of Tim Cook and Steve Jobs saying that the important thing that they do is not what they say yes to, but what they say no to. That product of saying no to something is usually and often based on having tested out actual versions of this device. Right? So my problem is that a lot of people attack DigiTimes as saying that they don't know what they're talking about. And that's just not the case. DigiTimes almost always knows what it's talking about. It's the conclusion that DigiTimes reaches that is not necessarily and accurate. And I will also say that the closer we get to an actual release, the more accurate they become until it approaches 100%.
It's almost like I'm living in an alternate reality right now, because I'm hearing you say this and my brain wants to tell me, no, Brian, DigiTimes is always wrong. And yet you're right. They may misinterpret the information, but they've got correct information most all the time. It's so hard to wrap my head around and accept that, but you're right.
So in the case of this iPad Pro, which was not what DigiTimes called it, a 13-inch iPad. And that's the rest of the Apple world has pretty much designated that concept as an iPad Pro. The chances that Apple didn't order some 13 and 12, 14, 15, 11-inch iPads over the years to test, nil.
Oh, they've absolutely been testing stuff like that. How could they not?
How could they not? Apple has absolutely had products like this made for testing. And but that doesn't mean that Apple was ever even close to deciding to manufacture this for sale.
Yeah, there's a big step between ordering prototype product and boxing it and shipping it to customers.
So the idea, this current story, was that Apple had shelved its plans to make this device. I would put that at 99% accurate. I have no doubt that Apple had that whatever sources DigiTimes had probably have that right, that Apple is no longer interested in that product. You know, that they've stopped ordering parts, or just told them that, you know, whatever it is that led to that conclusion is probably accurate. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Apple was ever going to make it in the first place. It just means that Apple was testing it. And I believe absolutely that Apple was testing such a thing.
I agree completely. Of course they were. If they weren't testing other sizes, we wouldn't have an iPad mini.
Right. Right. We, you know, different size iPhones, different size, you know, it's this is what Apple does. Apple finds the best way to do something, the best way that it can to do something. And those, the products that we see are the result of that process. that process cannot be devoid of testing out actual devices.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this isn't Star Trek where we can go to the holodeck and do incredibly realistic virtual mockups.
Right, that you could actually touch and hold.
Right. But even wouldn't that be fun?
It will be fun.
Yeah, but even still, at some point, they would have to make a physical product and test it.
You're still going to want to make that physical product and test it. It's just, you know, at that point, it's probably not going to happen until the process for a company like Apple, until it's like, okay, we're going to do this. Now let's just go ahead and make one and see. I don't know. Well,
that's so Apple. That's, hey, let's just make this, throw it at the wall, see if it sticks. Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my take. And I love looking at these rumors. When DigiTimes says something, I like looking at it and then trying to actually drive what it actually means. And I find that to be a fascinating process. And again, I'm coming from the standpoint of starting with the fact that there is a kernel of truth in almost all of these stories, probably all of them, but certainly almost all of them. And that's what makes it very interesting to me.
It is very interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing, now that I have a better understanding of exactly how it is that you look at what DigiTimes says, I'm really interested in seeing what little nuggets of truth you're picking out.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
All right. Well, I think that's enough story. So yeah, how about if I take us out?
Yeah, this worked out perfectly.
Yeah. Okay, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. I'm jgamut both places. And go on over to the iTunes store and rate our show, because I need validation too.
You can follow me on Twitter, TM O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The Basses by Broom, recorded just for us. And that was The Basses by Boom. I think I said Broom.
You totally said Broom. I was gonna ask about that.
That's so funny. You can find me at geektales.com. You can find Jeff at freshbrewtales.com, as well as the Mac Observer, of course. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
You know, I really liked Broom's first album. That swept me away.